Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's sure good to see everybody that has come out to be with us this evening. Thank you for the time you've given yourself to come here tonight and pray that our efforts will be definitely for the glory of our King, Jesus the Christ. Those of you that are planning to come to the marriage class, which is going to be beginning in January on the 13th, if you have not received an email from me, then please let me know so that way I can get some information to you before that class begins. I want to make a note of that before we begin. Ephesians, the fifth chapter, we're going to look at three verses, verse 15 through verse 17. Look therefore carefully how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Wherefore, be not foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Those three verses, as it mentions this word redeeming, as we talked about this morning, trying to find opportunities to receive and obtain as much time as possible. Because of what he says here in the warning of the days of evil, that would be great advice. Great words of wisdom given to people that are striving to please the Lord. Definitely, he points to those that are wise to say, don't walk as the unwise, but walk not in foolishness, but in the understanding of the will of the Lord. Now, that moment of which he mentions these things in verse 15, 16, and 17 are very vital and worth our attention as a Christian, what do you think that would mean to a marriage? That maybe the same thought would be true, that they would do everything they could to redeem the time, buy up the opportunities of the time that they would spend together. Sounds pretty good. Sounds like it would be a logical thing of which every marriage should apply to themselves. Marriages start out very lovingly, adoring one another, great anticipation, a lot of expectations, a lot of anxious moments, a lot of joy that they seem to think that it's on the horizon. And then all of a sudden, once they get married, things become to be very frustrating. And they start moving apart. They can't explain it. There's nothing that's really said, okay, this is the point at which we separated. But suddenly everything starts floundering. Everything starts becoming to be unstable. And it also becomes very frightening. Because the moments of which they anticipate all these things are really joined together as husband and wife at the beginning, all of a sudden, life happens, as they say. Next thing you know, they're much more divided than they are together. And they become critical of one another, judgmental. And there's a lot of arguments, more so than they thought they'd ever have. More conflicts. And even the possibilities of infidelity. And when you talk to those people about the things that are happening in their life, the thing that they don't realize is that they've kind of starved their marriage of time. Time is one of those great commodities that every marriage needs to insert into their relationship. When you ask them about what's going on, they say, well, you know, what's happened is we've just grown apart. We just don't share anything in common anymore. Doesn't seem to be like we can really communicate with each other. They can't pinpoint the exact thing that's happening other than to say this is a general overall observation that we have. Translated, what that means is they're not spending enough time together. I find that very interesting. For a couple that Diane and I have come together with us before they get married in premarital counseling, they have all kinds of time. All kinds. In the midst of their work, their school, their appointments, their schedules, their projects, their other family events and activities. They just seem to have all kinds of time for each other. And we ask them, well, how long is it that you spend each day talking to each other? It's not in terms of minutes. It's in hours. 1, 2, 3 hours a day. And I thought, that is fascinating. The same couple. Give them 5 years after they're married. That hour's gone of the time they spend together. Now they're struggling to find a moment. 5 minutes. 10 minutes. Doesn't seem to be there. Somewhere along the way, something's come into play that's kind of starved their marriage of what they knew before they got married, of one of the most important things of their marriage, and that's the time they had together. There's one thing about time that you must understand. Two words start with the first part of the word is I-N. Intention. You've got to intend to do this. And the other part is the word investment. The intention of which you invest in the time together is a special moment, regardless of how much it is. How much it is. This passage here in Ephesians chapter 5, where he says, look therefore carefully how you walk, not as the unwise, but as the wise. There's a possibility. The possibility is that we might take, I don't want to take that verse out of context and just apply it to something that's really not pertinent or vital or honorable. It, when you think about it regarding marriage, we might think the unwise are the people that aren't Christians. But I want you to know the people that are sometimes unwise when it comes down to their time in marriage are people that are Christians. They're not walking wisely, but they are walking busy. They don't have the time. Time is never stopped. Time is never saved. Time, there's only one thing you do with time. Spend it. You spend it. You spend it on a lot of things. And the responsibilities that we've had as husbands and wives, when you get married, it seems like they increase. Get more and more and more and more. And the schedules, the appointments are numerous. And what we do is we start spinning. It's like a vortex. And we don't know if it's ever going to stop. And we don't know how fast it's going to go. But we're in the middle of it. And we don't know when to get out. And we become to be these people here that walk, not in wisdom, but in foolishness. Instead of understanding what we should be doing with each other and understanding what the will of the Lord is, we find ourselves just trying to make ends meet. And we're just trying to get by. That's an interesting concept when it comes down to marriage. And we just can't find the time. We just don't know what we're going to do. Well, let me ask you the question. How much time are you in giving your marriage? Do you notice how you use the word, capitalize you? It's not your husband's fault. It's not your wife's fault. It's you. You and your marriage. We might want to blame it on somebody else and what their schedule's like and what their appointment's like. But it's you. You're the one. You're the one. We're working with a couple right now by virtue of Zoom connection related to their problems in their marriage. And one of the greatest things that they talk about that they have trouble with is communication. They just don't know how to communicate. We asked them the question, so what, tell us three things that you believe are some of the greatest hindrances to your communication with each other. And you, do you know what one of those common denominators that both of them had was? We just don't know how to get time to do it. We don't know where we're going to find the time to do it. We just don't have the time to do it. Now, they do have time to text each other. They do have time to do that. They don't have time to sit down one-on-one with each other face-to-face. And that's a problem for them. That is a problem Because the more they're together face to face, the greater the conflicts. But they can spend so much time texting each other and there's not any conflicts. Amazing how that works. It's because you can't see them. Words are powerful, but you don't feel them. You don't really gain the emotion of those words. You don't see the person's expression in the intensity of the words that they're saying in text, but you can when they're one-on-one. And they're afraid to get together to talk. But their problem is we don't have the time, along with all the other problems that they have. So now let me just ask you this. What's snatching the time away? What is it? So if I gave you a list, if ever I gave all of you that are married a list, an opportunity to write down a list of all the top five things that's really causing the difficulties, there should be this word up there. Yeah, you see it. I can't see it back there. It says, what's snatching your time? You got the list. You know what they are. You know what's starving your marriage of the time that it takes. You can list them. You can put them all together. And you can see how corrosive it is. You can see what's undermining your relationship with each other. But let me just give you four of them real quick. Number one, it's the idea of electronics. The idea of electronics. We've got a lot of them. Your phones, computers, video games, iPads. I mean, the list goes on and on of all the many things that are at our disposal. There's one woman that wrote about problems in their marriage. She said, many arguments occur in our marriage because of electronics, because of something that was text that was misunderstood. When we text, email, Facebook, and the like, we lose a vital piece of relationship, the emotional connection. Without the sound of our voices, the body language, the touch, we lose that contact of which God intended to be a very vital part of how we're supposed to relate and a vital part of how we're supposed to receive love and be in communion with each other. That was one statement that a woman made about the idea of how these electronics have succeeded so well and taking up all the opportunities we have with each other. And you know whether or not you're the one that spends so much time on the social media. You know how much time you're spending with your electronic. I'll tell you a quick story. Diane and I were sitting at a restaurant one time, and this is before I had a smartphone, but my phone was a flip phone, but it could take pictures. So we're sitting there in the restaurant, and we're noticing this couple over kind of the side of us, and they're both looking at their phones. They're not talking to each other. They're reading the messages, seeing the ladies post, whatever it was. So I turned my phone, I flipped it up, and I turned it where I could take a picture and said, Diane said, don't do that. I thought, this is a great illustration of exactly what I'm talking about, this focus of time. She said, don't take that picture. So there's something to be said for realizing how these electronics just take up our time. But the second one is this one, the idea of covet. Greed. We want, we want, and we want. Colossians, the third chapter, verse 5, talks about killing this, getting rid of this. It is an idolatry of what he talks about here in the book of Colossians, chapter 3, verse 5. When you talk about money, you talk about career, you talk about education, you talk about acceptance, popularity, success, all those things, we lust for all that. We want more of it. We can get more of it. According to Ecclesiastes chapter 2, you can get all kinds of it. But then Ecclesiastes also talks about how there are certain things that you really need to point your attention to that creates the joy that which God wants you to have, and that's your spouse. That's your spouse. Holding on to them. Having time for them. So let's just say you covet popularity. And you go to bed at night because you're popular among a lot of other people. But just answer this question. Is the popularity that you received and gained from so many other people, is that what hugs you at night when you go to bed? And now, is that what comforts you, gives you peace? That's what you rise up with the next day? Is it the fact that you're getting all this acceptance from all these other people? Is that what you really covet? don't know how many of us, and I would say the number is very few, if probably none, of us will ever grace the front cover of a magazine and find acceptance and popularity from a lot of other people. But the thing about it is, are we popular with the people that we live with? Covet, greed, things, all this. You see, we've got positions in life of where we have the ability to funnel money from here to here, manage this person from here to here. But is that position going to be what's most important within your marriage? But coveting, we do. And that snatches the time, as well as the idea of self-gratification. And by that means of self-gratification, I talk about elders and deacons and preachers and teachers and bosses and coaches and counselors. People who are in touch with other people, that through them giving to those people and serving those people, it gives them this sense of, I'm liked, fulfillment, accomplishment. They give so much time, so much energy, so much of themselves to everybody else and serving them. And they get this self-gratification because I've helped, I've encouraged, I've helped them recover, I've benefited them, I've blessed them, all those kind of things. It's like preachers going off in gospel meetings. I'm teaching the gospel to all these other people. Self-gratification. Yes, we're to do good works. No question about the Bible talking about all those good works. But seeking a good work at the absence or the neglect of your spouse and your marriage is not the right goal. God never said neglect your responsibilities in your marriage so that you could do all these good works for the service of all people. Diane and I had the opportunity several years ago to attend a marriage leadership type seminar. And when we did, there was a moment by which they got all of us together, all the couples together. And we each had to speak about something we learned through that weekend. And there's this man that was standing up in front of this group. And we were part of that group. And he'd been 25 or 30 years as a counselor, marriage counselor. And he stood up there in front of all the group and he looks at his wife with tears streaming down his eyes, down his cheeks rather, from his eyes, and he looks at her and he says, I want to apologize to you. I'm sorry because I've given more time and spent more hours serving others rather than serving you. He was getting his self-gratification from everybody else. But he's losing his relationship with his wife. And then the fourth one is misplaced priorities. We could pretty well state Matthew chapter 6:33 without even turning over to see where it says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. We can pretty well enunciate that very clearly. Even the book of Ecclesiastes 12:13. We can talk about that very clearly. This is a whole duty man, fear God and keep his commandments. We can just quote that day after day. But then we can also be people who will talk about how it is, I just don't have time. I don't have time. There's a wife, a mother, wrote these words. She said on the phone to me, she said, I don't have time. We really do have time problems. We're working. Two working people don't have time to sit, to talk, much less study together. We're late from work every evening. Sometimes we go out of town, deadlines, etc. We just do not have time, she says. But what's she going to do when her husband is adored by another woman because she gave him more time than she did? What's she going to do then? And things have gotten faster. We can microwave everything. We can microwave so much. And I'm not talking about just the actual microwave, but so many different things in life we can microwave. We can quickly go through some things. Everything's supposed to be making things faster. While simultaneously, everything's gotten to be busier. Everything's starting to crowd us. Everything's starting to demand of us. Other things of the world are calling us. And as a result, we're finding ourselves enunciating Matthew 6:33, but very seldomly are we ever practicing it, especially in marriage. I'm going to briefly tell you this story, true story. A family, man and woman, both Christians, where the wife had just recently took a new job. This is back, a few years back. And she took this job because she thought that they really needed the money because they just purchased a farm and they needed something, somewhere to obtain revenue to pay for the farm. So she took this job, which required 6 weeks of training out of town. As a result, it became to be very mentally stressful. And as a result, she was called on various times of the day to handle abused children, deal with human services, on call all the time. Sunday night after service, one night she called Diane into a classroom. She said, "I need you to pray with me because I'm losing connection with my husband and our children. Her son, oldest child, is crying for me to stay at home. But she says, I feel trapped. We bought this farm. We got to pay for it. I want our children to be raised in the country. But if you're not there, it doesn't matter if you're in the country. It don't matter where you are if you're not there." So we find ourselves misplacing our authority, our priorities. The first casualty of busyness, not being focused, is spirituality. Two other passages that we could really enunciate very clearly is 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58. "Wherefore, beloved, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." We can very clearly state that. Even Galatians chapter 6, verse 9. "Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season you shall reap if you faint not." We can really talk about that. While all at the same time, the spirituality of our marriage is lost because of the busyness, because of the world which has filtered its way into our lives, and we've chosen to follow that path. This is not to in any way intimidate those of you that are going to come to the marriage class in a few weeks. We did a marriage class several years ago. Started out at the first of the year. I won't tell you how many couples started, but I will tell you at the end of the class, by the time we got through the end of the class, we only had two couples left. Maybe we ought to read again the book of Luke chapter 10. And read verse 38 to verse 41. And listen very carefully to how cumbered Martha was and all the things that were going on while Jesus was in the same house with her, losing the opportunity to be with Jesus. And I think that's something very important at that moment. Buying up the opportunity. Seeing what we can do to want what God wants us to do. Now, if we decide that the busyness is going to take over and the world's going to be the call of which we answer most, then for every husband in this room must understand Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25 to verse 28 is still calling you. It's still calling you. Listen to some of the things that are found in that passage. Verse 25, and please note the context of Jesus as the head of the church. Christ loved the church, verse 25. That he might sanctify it, having cleansed it by the washing of water with the word, that he might present the church a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy, without blemish. And husbands, love your wives as your own bodies. Verse 29, for no man ever hates his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it. While the world is being calling us and we're answering its call, those responsibilities are still there. They don't go away. The spirituality of what Jesus' mission was to bring about the church, to build it, as he talked about in Matthew chapter 16, came about. And here he is doing everything he can to keep it without spot, without wrinkle, holy, blemish. And you know what it takes to do that? It takes T-I-M-E, time, to do that. Time. And it's a good thing the world, as many times as it called, he answered the call of the Father first. Wives, ladies, as much as you may talk about how the call of the world is something you need to pay attention to most, and you got to answer because they're calling you all the time. And I'm not just saying on the phone. Everything that they're wanting you to be and do is out there for you to enjoy and to be a part of. Yet, when you look at 1 Peter chapter 3, the responsibilities are still there. Of how it is that you can gain and win your husband to Jesus. Let it be the hidden man of the heart in verse 4. In the incorruptible apparel of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of a great price. That call is still there. And we are the people. We are the people who, if you had the opportunity, write it on the sheet of paper that says, okay, let's list your priorities in life. We'd definitely be the one that says, number one, God. Number two, marriage. Number three, children. Number four, job. Number five, family. Number six, clubs. Number seven, this. Number eight, this. We'll announce it very, very clearly of all those things. And then right behind it, within just a few statements, we will make the words, we'll state the words, I don't have time. I don't have time. If your marriage fails, everything fails. And your boss will not come up to you, hold out his hand, and shake it, and say thank you for the sacrifice you made of your family to work for us. And your children will not come up and hug you because you let them play every sport under the sun while you at the same time are going through a divorce. If your marriage fails, everything fails. When couples come to see us and talk about their marriage, number one, the problem is spirituality. Number two, without a doubt, it's communication. Number three, it's a time thing. And then when we give them assignments to do, to get ready for from one session to the next, they don't have the time to complete them within a week's time. But what they will do is they'll get in the car and they'll start trying to scrounge away and see if they can answer all these questions before they get to our house. And then they come in with half the questions answered. Some of it's blank. And then they say to us, I don't have time. Yet, he's been someone who's not appreciated me, and she's been one who has criticized me, and we have so many conflicts, we've got so many arguments, we can't get along with each other, and the list goes on, and they're coming to us, and they're expecting us to resolve something of which they don't have time to do. What are we going to do? So therefore, we come to this moment. What do? To have a focused marriage. I mean, when we're getting people who say, my spouse doesn't understand me. We just don't get along. We just can't. I can't do anything to please her. I can't do anything to please him. He is so out of it. She is so checked out. All these kind of things. How do we remove these kind of thoughts? And here is probably the number one answer. We just need to balance things. We just need to balance things. You know what balance is? Now, if I'm going to balance this broom for any length of time, whatever I'm holding on to over here is going to have to let go. Because I got to hold on to this. I got to keep this thing up. I got to keep this thing going. So everything over here, everything I'm touching over here has got to go. Or else it's going to fall. It's going to fall. But since we are so educated, and since we are so advanced, and since we're so well tuned into what's going on in the world, since we are so well versed, we think we can balance everything. We can balance it all. And we can balance anything. But it's not one of these things that you say, okay, I gotta equally put this weight over here with this weight over here, and we can balance it, and everything's gonna focus itself, and everything's gonna be adjusted, and everything's gonna be fine, everything's gonna be equal, everything's gonna be okay. When in reality, do you know what balance is? Balance is the fact that we're doing as many things, having as many things, planning as many things without any of it falling over and failing. I don't know how many of you are old enough to know Ed Sullivan. Ed Sullivan had this guy came on TV one time. He took this stick, started spinning the plate. Took the other stick, started spinning the plate. Took another stick, started spinning the plate. I mean, he had a half a dozen or more plates spinning. But by the time he got down to here to this one, he had to go over here to this one and start getting it back because it started wobbling. And then next thing you know, he's over here. He's over everywhere. He's trying to balance everything. And we think he's a Houdini. We think he's great. We think he's marvelous. We got to have him at our program. We got to have him on our TV show. We got to have him do these things because there's nobody else that does this. Balance is doing all those things. We try to spin it. We try to keep it all spinning because if it falls, and you must know that one of those plates over there, that's your marriage. That's my marriage. But balance is a term we use to describe a priority we have not made. That's what balance is. Therefore, let me suggest to you seven opportunities, time opportunities. Number one, meals. At your house, not somewhere else. Sit down, eat a meal together. Don't throw it in real fast so that you can get up and go do something else. Do not set a time as to how long your meal will be. Pray for yourself and your family. You know how we like to digest and taste what it is that we're eating? So let me just turn that to say, savor the people you're eating with at the table. Number two, travel. The reason I picked the first two is because that's where we spend a lot of our time, meals and travel. Travel to work, travel to the game, travel to family, travel to friends, travel to here, travel to there. Had a couple one time call us and said, we're going to be on a 3 or 4 hour trip. I said, do you have anything that we could do to work on our marriage? I said, okay, I'll send you some questions. And if you are interested in taking a trip somewhere and you want some conversation that you need to have with your husband, with your wife, call me, send me a message, talk to me after service, and I'll give you the list of questions that you can talk about that you will not get through on your whole trip. But you'll have enough information to go to the next trip. But that's how you focus on your marriage. Number three is service to others, to gather into one another. In the book of Galatians chapter 5, there's a statement that is made in verse 13. Brethren, you're called to freedom. Only use not your freedom for an occasion to the flesh, but through love be servants one to another. Serving one another. Diane and I are go-to couple when it comes to service at Aquila and Priscilla. Romans chapter 16, verse 3 to verse 5. Read about them. Digest them. Go into what it is that they're doing. And understand that they're doing this together. It's not his thing. It's not her thing. And then pick out all those one another passages that talk about service to others, hospitality to one another. You ever thought about how important that would be to your husband, to your wife? Hospitality to one another, kindness to one another, edify one another, bear one another's burdens, confess your faults to one another. All kinds of one another passages that just insert yourself into those and let those be time opportunities of where you serve your spouse. And then recreation. I will not ask for a show of hands, but I just wonder how many of you have anything common that you and your husband, you and your wife like to do together. We ask couples that when they have difficulties that come to us, so what do y'all do together? Nothing. Share the same bed, same house, same children, same food, but nothing else. Recreation. There's got to be something that you people can do together. And then, this one right here. Here's the reason I brought this one up. Is that there are some husbands and wives that say, I need to keep myself busy. Where there's a moment by which you should be resting. That way you give at least two compliments a day to your husband or to your wife. Ephesians 4 verse 29 enunciates it very well. When he says that no corrupt speech proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may give grace to them that hear. It's definitely complimenting if you give grace to them that hear, your husband, your wife. Focus on your mate for at least 10 minutes a day. And I don't mean just say, okay, sit down here, I'm going to look at you for 10 minutes. No. You sit down there and give attention to them for 10 minutes because that will be the 10 most valuable minutes you'll get in each day. And if you do that 30 days in a row, then you begin to be less involved in the call of the world and more pointed to the needs of your spouse to serve them. And then this one. Pray together about and for each other every day, in their presence or not. But the more you find yourself praying for them, and as I state here, pursue God first, then you find yourself in a position where their presence with you is so valuable. So let's say it this way. If you don't pray for your spouse, there's a great tendency you're not going to want to be with them very much. Yet if you pray for the person that you're concerned about, the likelihood is you want to be with them and you want to spend time with them, like God, for example. So pursue God in everything you should be doing in life. Make your choices so that your marriage will grow in Him. Listen to how He says, this is the way you do marriage. And then the last one. Yep. Get rid of the distractions. All the time constraints. Close the door. Put up a note. Do not disturb. Reschedule. Throw out this. Throw out that. Stop this program. Don't go here. Turn off the device. I mean, the list goes on and on. Just get rid of all the distractions so that way you can give the focus and commit yourself to the time and to the work that needs to be done. Let's read Ephesians 5 before we close one more time. Verse 15. Look therefore carefully how you walk, not as unwise but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. Wherefore be not foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. The will of the Lord. That's an interesting phrase, the will of the Lord, rather than my will be done. I want to mention something about the will of the Lord as it relates to Jesus and time. Jesus came to the world in John chapter 4, John chapter 5, John chapter 6, echoes these phrases or these words of saying, my meat is to do the will of Him that sent me. I'm here to accomplish His work. And in all three of those texts, He talks about the will of God being done And the longer he lived upon the earth, the more he understood the will of the Lord and how vital it was to accomplish the will of the Lord. In the midst of all the people in the world calling and demanding and wanting and asking and needing from him. If Jesus the Christ had listened to greater the appeal of the world than the will of God, he would have never died on the cross. And thanks be to God, he didn't listen to the busyness of the early world in which we know the church came, and it ruined the scheme of redemption. That's why Jesus stands as the premier example for a marriage in Ephesians 5. To highlight how important it is to understand and follow the will of the Lord. But there is one thing that your marriage needs more than anything else, and that's for you to be a Christian. One that truly repents and confesses in Jesus the Christ and is baptized in this water to rise up to walk in newness of life. A Christian that is committed to the call and understanding of the Lord, not the call of the busy world in which we live. If you want to do that, we'll help you do that. To do what's right as together we sing this song.